II. Here in the United States, the death of Nelson Rockefeller stole some of the headlines from another major event, which is drawing to a close. On Friday afternoon, January 26, just a few hours before Rockefeller was killed, the man who parades as Pope John Paul II arrived in Mexico. Today, after five tumultuous days there, he is returning to Rome. It was 5 months ago in Audio Letter 37 that I first alerted my listeners to the drastic changes that were afoot in the Roman Catholic Church. Pope John Paul I had been elected just the previous day, but as I explained then, Bolshevik influences within the Vatican were preparing to throw the Church into their fight against Russia, which has wrestled free of Bolshevik control. And Pope John Paul I, soon known as the Smiling Pope, vanished from the scene barely a month later. In Audio Letter 39, I explained how he had run afoul of the Bolshevik game plan and what had happened to him as a result. And last month, I revealed that his successor, the real Pope John Paul II, has also been eliminated. In his place, there is now an actor, a man who is neither Polish nor Christian, who is doing the bidding of his Bolshevik masters. He bears a close resemblance to the man he replaced, but there are visual clues to look for. Close-up photographs of this actor should be compared carefully with those taken in October 1978, immediately after Cardinal Wojtyła was named Pope. As identification experts know, a person's ears are almost like fingerprints in their uniqueness. And you will discover that the ears, along with other detailed features, are not the same now as they were at first. Since making public the tragic destruction from within that is taking place in the Catholic Church, I have received heartbreaking letters from Catholic priests everywhere. They have confided in me about their torment because of the Bolshevik control, which is spreading like cancer throughout the Catholic Church. From my own past experience, I share their deep sadness. To report the machinations of Bolshevism in the Church is painful for me. But, my friends, the central and dominant issue facing men of goodwill today is that of the satanic forces rampant on planet Earth. In this vein, some Catholic priests have revealed their fear to me that to remain in their priestly positions would jeopardize their faith itself. Last month, I pointed out how important publicity is for the actor Pope in the anti-Russian game plan of the Bolsheviks. Describing this game plan, I said, quote, "These days, the actor Pope is the most visible Pope in history, made so by the controlled major media," unquote. And early this month, on January 6, the New York Times echoed this very theme. In an article titled, "John Paul's Winning Ways," the second sentence read, quote, "He has become the most highly visible Pope in modern history, sallying forth from the remoteness of the Vatican every few days and charming the crowds, from school children to old people, and from nuns to soccer players," unquote. Ironically, the same article adds later on that, quote, "He plays to different crowds with the skills of the former actor that he is," unquote. My friends, the actor Pope is being used as a Pied Piper. Strictly as a tactic, he is singing a tune of progressive conservatism that is music to the ears to untold millions of Catholics. Yet his two major themes, religious freedom and human rights, are actually centered on man, not God. With this clever counterfeit of the real message of Jesus Christ, deadly politics is being disguised as religion, and the Catholic world, entranced by the tune of the actor Pope, is already being led down the path toward the Bolshevik slaughterhouse of war against Russia. It was 14 months ago in Audio Letter 28 that I was first able to reveal the revolutionary change that has taken place in the Kremlin. The atheistic Bolsheviks, who all but destroyed Christian Russia 60 years ago, have been overthrown after a struggle of six decades. In their place are self-styled spiritual communists an old and extremely tough Christian sect of native Russians. And as I revealed in Audio Letter 36, these new rulers of the Kremlin are actually in a process of discarding communism in everything but name. Instead, their basic political viewpoint today is that of a strong Russian nationalism, as I discussed in Audio Letter 28. So, in a descriptive sense, today would be more accurately called spiritual nationalists. The overthrown atheistic Bolsheviks are in a frenzy to cut down Christian Russia again before the last vestiges of Bolshevik influence can be expelled. They know that their time is short if Russia's holy war to wipe out Bolshevism is successful. The Bolsheviks know that the heart of Russia is spiritual, and so they are trying to rip out the heart of Russia by means of a spiritual attack. Already the actor Pope is working feverishly on overtures to the Eastern Orthodox churches, hoping to reunite them with the Roman Church after 15 centuries of separation. And the real target in all of this is the Russian Orthodox Church. Before the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, the Russian Orthodox Church was infiltrated by the Bolsheviks. Today, Bolshevik influence is fast being weeded out in Russia, but if the plans of the Bolsheviks and the Vatican succeed, it will be restored as a weapon against Russia. All this is tied to the secret American first strike strategy, which I exposed in detail in Audio Letter 37, and the just-ended visit to Mexico by the actor Pope is part of an elaborate strategy to throw Eastern Europe into bloody revolution against Russia. On January 24, just hours before the actor Pope left for Santo Domingo in Mexico, Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko had a two-hour audience with him. Vatican officials said they could not recall such a long, intensive audience between a pope and a statesman. No statement was issued about what was discussed, but I can reveal that the actor pope pretended to show his concern for Catholics in Russia. Gromyko, however, argued in effect that the pope not rocked the boat in Eastern Europe, saying that the moves underway by the Church will destroy Christianity, not help it. Then the actor pope left for Latin America. At his elbow throughout the trip was Giovanni Cardinal Benelli, a close friend of Henry Kissinger. As I revealed last month, Benelli is the key Bolshevik agent in the Vatican, and he went along to write the script for the actor pope to follow. The papal trip to Mexico was a tremendous publicity stunt and a prelude to the confrontation with Russia. The heavy news coverage surrounding the trip served to build a much broader public awareness of the actor pope's image as an anti-communist. At the same time, the visit to Mexico was a preview of the pope's scheduled trip to Poland next May, and as such, it was well calculated to send nervous shivers up the spines of government officials in Warsaw and Moscow. In Mexico, as in Poland, the government does not officially condone the Catholic Church. Instead, for historical reasons, the Mexican Constitution imposes stringent limitations on church activity and power. Yet in Mexico, just as in Poland, the population is about 90% Catholic. And so when the Pope decided to go to Mexico, the Mexican government had no practical choice but to allow him to come. Furthermore, Mexican law forbids churchmen to preach in public or even to wear clerical garb in public. But these restrictions were clearly unenforceable for the Pope. To limit his visibility that way would have invited riots and mayhem, and the government knew it. For Mexico, the only practical thing to do was to wink at the law and give the Pope free rein during his visit. But for Poland, the situation is not so simple. The public intention of the actor pope is to visit Poland for the 900th anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Stanislaus. To most Americans, having little idea who St. Stanislaus was, this probably sounds remote, irrelevant, and therefore somewhat tame. But to the Poles, the symbolism and emotional tensions involved are enormous. The actor pope is the look-alike of the late Karol Cardinal Wojtyła of Poland. Before becoming pope last October, Wojtyła was the Archbishop of Krakow. 900 years ago, St. Stanislaus was also the Archbishop of Krakow. Wojtyła was widely known among Polish Catholics as a man who stood up to the government, even back in the brutal days of Stalinism. And 900 years ago, St. Stanislaus repeatedly spoke out in defiance of the king. He even excommunicated the king for cruelty to his subjects. 900 years ago this May, St. Stanislaus was sought out by the king and killed for his defiance. And this May, the actor pope is scheduled to appear in Krakow to climax observances on the date of the anniversary of the martyrdom. Since this past September, the Vatican has been engaging in tactics designed to steadily build up tensions in Poland. And since Christmas Day, the rising tensions have been focused around St. Stanislaus Day, because in messages to Polish churches just before Christmas, the actor pope urged that the St. Stanislaus observances begin Christmas Day and continue until May. The Warsaw government is trying to figure out how to keep the lid on in the face of the feverish tensions that will apparently exist by May. But the final key to the Bolshevik plan is a stratagem which even the actor pope himself does not suspect. If all goes according to plan, he will arrive in Krakow after first filling the streets with crowds that would dwarf those seen in Mexico. There in Krakow, during the observances of the martyrdom of St. Stanislaus, the actor pope himself is to be assassinated. The Bolshevik conspirators will arrange to make it appear that the Russian-dominated Warsaw regime is at fault, and agitators will whip up the crowds. It will provide the classic triggering incident for revolt, and the Pope's revolution will be on. It will erupt in Krakow and spread like wildfire throughout Poland. And if the Bolshevik plans are a complete success, the Pope's revolution will spill over into Hungary, 67% Catholic, and to other Catholic strongholds of Eastern Europe. The Bolsheviks believe that by lighting the fires of revolution at Russia's front door, they will be able to continue to keep the Kremlin off balance. And if Russia has her hands full trying to put down the Pope's revolution, they reason, Russia will be in no position to go to war. Like America's shotgun diplomatic marriage to Red China, they expect the coming revolution to buy more time for their panic rearmament for nuclear war one. But, my friends, the Bolsheviks are wrong, dead wrong. If they do succeed in their plans to stain Eastern Europe with a sea of Catholic blood, it will not stave off Russia. Instead, it will be the last straw for the Kremlin. As Russia's rulers see things getting out of hand, they will realize that their advantage over the West, all things considered, has stopped increasing at that point. Seeing that further delay is no longer on their side, they will wait no longer. The remaining moves on their pre-war chessboard will simply be abandoned. Contrary to Bolshevik expectations, the Russians will not try to put down the Pope's revolution before going to war. Instead, they will shift quickly to a full war footing. Their first priority will be to destroy the United States and other pockets of Bolshevism worldwide, using their space triad with devastating effect. Only after the war will they try to pick up the pieces in Eastern Europe. Topic number 3. 1 year ago last month, loud air blasts at sea began shaking homes and frightening thousands along America's east coast. For a while, government spokesmen tried to just ignore them, but the booms, now known as airquakes, would not go away. Next, they were ridiculed in the controlled major media, but that tactic quickly changed too, because too many people were hearing them to accept it all as a big joke. Finally, after these airquakes had been going on for several months, the government tried to explain it all away by blaming the whole thing on freak weather conditions. Alleged experts were trotted out to impress the public with a mumbo-jumbo about unusually cold air layers. Waving their arms about these weird weather conditions, some tried to say that the booms were due to military aircraft perhaps 100 miles out to sea. Others managed to keep a straight face as they told us that the booms were caused by the Concorde supersonic transport. Somehow, they said, the shock waves from the plane were striking America's east coast more than an hour ahead of the plane itself and with incredible force. Explanations like these were ridiculous on their face. Yet many Americans, eager to be pacified, accepted these insults to their intelligence at face value. Most of the vast number of earthquakes taking place nationwide were kept out of the press, and people calmed down. Even many of my listeners tried not to believe the truth about the earthquakes, which I made public shortly after they began in Audio Letter 29 for December 1977. They were caused by newly operational Russian cosmospheres, firing their particle beam weapons in a defocused mode into the air over the Atlantic Ocean. When I recorded Audio Letter 29, there were 7 cosmospheres hovering over the United States. But in the months that followed, the numbers of cosmospheres grew into the hundreds worldwide. Now that the media lid is on the earthquakes, a government-sponsored study of them by the MITRE Corporation has been quietly released. The report, released early last month, lists 594 earthquakes between December 1977 and the following June. By June, of course, those alleged freak cold air layers of last winter had to be long gone. The study does its best to blame the booms on aircraft noises anyway. But 181 earthquakes were impossible to link, even artificially, to any acceptable excuse. So the report lamely concludes that they must be of some natural origin. It wouldn't do, after all, to admit the real cause. The cosmospheres, my friends, are Russia's version of the hovering weapons platforms about which the late General Thomas Power tried in vain to give a warning 14 years ago. General Power, former head of Air Force Research and Development and then of the Strategic Air Command, knew what he was talking about. In Audio Letter 32 last March, I reviewed in detail the efforts of General Power to warn the American people. But as with many others who have tried to alert us over the years, his efforts were suppressed and ignored. As the numbers of cosmospheres have multiplied worldwide during the past year, UFO sightings have likewise been mushrooming. As in the past, some UFO sightings today are just that, unidentified flying objects. But nowadays, it would be more appropriate in many cases to call the sighted objects IFOs, that is, identified flying objects, because they are not unknown space visitors, but identifiable as Russian cosmospheres. In some cases, though, combined sightings are taking place, which involve both cosmospheres and true UFOs. In the past, UFOs have always been attracted by aircraft, rockets, and spacecraft, especially when these are new or experimental. The cosmospheres are no exception to this rule. Wherever cosmospheres are congregated nowadays over military targets, UFOs occasionally show up and dart around among the cosmospheres. The best-known case of this type so far happened recently in New Zealand. Late last month, on the evening of December 30, an Australian television news crew made headlines worldwide by filming what they called UFOs from an airplane over New Zealand. The film, some 7 minutes long, was purchased by the BBC and by the CBS television network. On January 2nd, CBS showed less than 50 seconds of the film, which showed a glowing spherical object. And most of the objects sighted that evening by the camera crew and other observers were described as spheres of light. However, as the film clip was shown, a soundtrack was played. The Australian newsman described a different object. He said it looked like, quote, a flying saucer, unquote. Walter Cronkite did not say whether or not the soundtrack had been recorded simultaneously with the film clip that was being shown. In any case, the spherical object in the film was a Russian cosmosphere. But the attempts to discredit the film are an echo of the ridiculous government stories about the earthquakes last year. On the evening of January 25th, just 6 days ago, Walter Cronkite of CBS News reminded viewers of the New Zealand UFOs. Then he went on, quote, well, The New Zealand Air Force reported today that freak atmospheric conditions, not visitors from outer space, were responsible. Investigators said one definite cause was an unusually bright Venus rising in the eastern sky, unquote. My friends, the recent flurries of so-called UFO sightings over Australia and New Zealand are actually due to cosmospheres, and with good reason. Lately, we are hearing a great deal about plans for America's so-called MX mobile missile. But in fact, America mobile missiles are already being scattered like popcorn worldwide. Our Bolshevik rulers are hoping to outflank Russia with sheer numbers of missile sites, if nothing else. The missiles involved are based on our standard Minuteman. As a solid fuel rocket, it is well suited for mobile basing. In fact, this was designed into some versions of the Minuteman in the first place. And now, New Zealand is host to two American mobile missile bases. One is not far from Hamilton on the North Island. The other is near Alexandra on the South Island. They are concealed in mountainous areas. Likewise, a very large missile complex is in the Northern Territory of Australia. It straddles the Robinson River and spreads out over an 18 by 22 mile area. In that area, there's no one to watch what goes on but alligators and aborigines. The Russians are keeping close tabs on all American missile bases, new and old, by means of their cosmospheres. As I've explained in the past, their particle beam weapons can blast our missiles at the moment of launch. But our Bolshevik rulers believe they have devised a way to disable the cosmospheres just long enough to get the missiles safely launched against Russia. Scientific intelligence analysts in the United States understand that the cosmospheres hover by floating in the Earth's electrostatic field. They also presume that the Russians use the same techniques we would in order to aim their particle beam weapons, that is, a combination of infrared detection and radar. They reason that if the cosmospheres can be disturbed from their hovering positions, and if their sensing systems can be blinded, their particle beam weapons will do no good. Even if they fire, they will be aimed wild and will miss our rockets as they are launched. The solution they have devised is called a cobalt ionization bomb. Unlike a normal cobalt bomb, such a device is not designed to create a tremendous blast. Its primary purpose instead is to create tremendous quantities of totally ionized cobalt. That is, the cobalt atoms are stripped of all their electrons, leaving bare nuclei. The plan is to detonate these at various locations in the upper fringes of the atmosphere, as high as possible, but below the hovering altitude of the cosmospheres. The result will be an enormous storm of electrons, spreading horizontally in the Earth's magnetic field to pass underneath the cosmospheres. This, they believe, will briefly disrupt the electrostatic field around each cosmosphere, and also the infrared and radar systems used to watch the missiles below. And while the cosmospheres are briefly incapacitated in this way, our rulers plan to launch our ICBMs right past them. Meanwhile, ground-based high-power lasers will be used in an effort to shoot down the cosmospheres. But, my friends, our masters are falling victim to the very intelligence gap which they themselves brought about years ago. Because the Russians well understand the importance of surprise, including technological surprise. And so while they have allowed their space triad to become known in intelligence circles because of its deployment, they still have a master secret weapon in reserve for the war itself. This weapon is a system to protect the Achilles heel of their beam weapons, the ability to aim them accurately. It is called psychoenergetic range finding, or PRF. PRF does not rely on conventional radiations like infrared or radar. Instead, it's based upon detection of the actual atomic signature of the target. And normal jamming techniques have no effect on PRF. So when the American cobalt ionization bombs explode, the cosmospheres will be able to aim right through the electron storms to blast our missiles. And so, my friends, day by day, the atheistic Bolsheviks are leading the Anglo-Saxon West into the cauldron of thermonuclear war. Already we can sense the impending doom in our nostrils. Yet still we refuse to do anything to stop it. If we allow Western civilization to be dissolved, will the survivors dare to say, "May God forgive us"? Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.